When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Far back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right, and the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 11:02, Malusis with you. It's a Wednesday midday in for BT and Sal. 888-808-1019 is your number to call. And I've said it time and time again, when you look at Major League Baseball, you can't judge games, you know, just on its own. Injuries can obviously affect a baseball team when you're looking at, you know, high-impact players, players of import. Say we've lived it with Judge and the Yankees, stuff like that. You lose a starter, Kodai Senga with the Mets, and you know, the trickle-down effect from there and all of that. But, you know, bad losses, good wins, they happen during the course of the regular season, you know, even against bad opponents. That's what happened last night for the Yankees down in Washington against the Nats. They were, you know, left eight guys on base, 0 for 8 with runners in scoring position. They were sloppy in the field once again, you know, and had four errors. That, what, bottom half of the sixth inning last night was a disaster. And you get frustrated at times when you look at the Yankees. I'll get to the biggest key for the Yankees here moving forward. And it's not the captain. It's not number 99. It's not even Juan Soto. I'll get to you the biggest key here momentarily. But what bothers me is this, is when does the love affair with LeMahieu come to an end? Like, when do you get to a point, you know, where you're Aaron Boone? And I get in during the recent stretch, last two and a half, I think in the month of August, LeMahieu's actually hitting 250. So he hasn't been downright terrible, but we are a long way away from him being the machine, the guy that Yankee fans completely and utterly trusted. The first 2 years, he was donning the pinstripes, wearing the road grays that he completely and utterly trusted in a big-time spot. That DJ LeMahieu is long gone. Now, you can, you know, cross the fingers, say a prayer to the good Lord above, do whatever you need to do. You listen to Boone after the game and talk about how he's, you know, working hard and working his way back. And I'm not telling you that LeMahieu's not a good guy, not a well-liked teammate. He is. Doesn't work hard. He does. Is sitting on his rear end. He does not. You know, LeMahieu wants to find it as much as anybody else. I mean, he came here because he wanted to be a Yankee. He came here with no job and has earned everything and then gets that six-year, $90 million extension after that initial two-year deal. So you feel for LeMahieu, but at some point in time, when the Yankees have a slop fest of a game last night, and you're sitting there, and you've got three lefties sitting on the bench, you got Finnegan in the game for the Washington Nationals, and you're the Yankees in the top half of the ninth inning, after, you know, Chisholm doubles, Volpe grounds out, which scores Chisholm, Wells singles, Verdugo singles, and you have men on down at this point in time 4-2. It's one out, and you send DJ LeMahieu up, and after the game, no. I mean, Boone gets asked the question after the game about pinch hitting for LeMahieu there, and he's going to look at the fact that Finnegan, his stats going up against lefties as compared to righties. He's going to target the fact that his OPS against lefties is about 693. Well, I mean, DJ LeMahieu's OPS on the season is is about 500. Like, those are the rationalization you look at where, you know, you look at the manager. And I understand there have been times, the Philadelphia game, that afternoon affair where LeMahieu basically had a season in one game. There have been instances this year where DJ LeMahieu has flashed at times. But let's be honest. I mean, he is not even a shell of his former self as a hitter. And then the rationalization from Boone after the game made little to no sense. If you're going to be an analytics team, if you're going to lean into it and you're going to face the facts and you're going to tell me that, you know, well, Finnegan going up against lefties as compared to righties, look at his splits. He's significantly better going up against lefties than righties. Well, let me look at this. Who had hits before him? All lefties. And how exactly do you send LeMahieu fouls out to right field up in that spot? It's a 4-2 game. LeMahieu's terrible. I get they want it. They're dying for LeMahieu to break out. they feel bad. All the leg injuries, all the lower body injuries, whether it be fouling the ball off of his foot, whether it be the groin, whether it be the hamstring, whether it be the oblique, everything that we've seen, all the injuries over the years with DJ LeMahieu, comes to a point, though, when you're looking at it and you say, you know what? He is no longer that guy. You can want it. You can desire it. It's not happening. You know, it's like me when I go out to go get something to eat. I can want to eat healthy. I can be dying to eat healthy. But at some point in time, you know, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to eat myself a cheeseburger and fries. It bothers my wife. I'm going to have a Coke Zero. Drink water. Hydrate properly. It's hot. All of those things. Look at you. My kids are asking me, why are you sweating so much? I have to get healthier. I have made poor decisions. That was a poor decision by Aaron Boone and the Yankees last night. You're watching and you say to yourself, as sloppy as this game is, it's the Washington Nationals who are sitting there at the time. They're, what, 13, 14 games under the 500 mark. Why are you sending LeMahieu up? Why can't you pinch it for him? When does it come a point in time where you say, mercy, I've seen enough. Can't do it. I like the guy. Root for the guy. I desire it. I want it. But you know what? It ain't happening. That's the point I've reached with DJ LeMahieu. I love him. Who doesn't? First 2 years, he was a top five MVP candidate in the American League with the Yankees. He was the machine. Guy that can play multiple positions all along the infield, third, second, first base, do all those things. That guy is long gone. The Yankees are the last team to realize it. Now, despite the loss, and it was a tough one watching that game last night, losing to the Washington Nationals 4-2, as the Yankees are sitting there 23 games over the 500 mark, getting ready to continue that series later on tonight. The biggest key for the Yankees here, in all seriousness moving forward, is this. Is Cole. As brilliant as Judge is, and you look at the stats and, he's 127% better than the average major league hitter. All the things that kind of, the fact that I think it was Jack Curry brought out a tweet yesterday afternoon that as many home runs as Judge has hit in recent memory, well, he's stolen home runs as well. I think he has 9 home runs that he's stolen. We saw that a couple nights ago. He's an unbelievable baseball player. He really is. Easy to say, I'm sitting here on this Wednesday, I'm 48 years old. It's easy to say, like, he's the greatest Yankee that I've ever seen. Mattingly was my childhood. Anybody that grew up in the 80s, you love Mattingly. It was always about Donnie Baseball. You had the poster up in the room, everything that you thought about Donnie Baseball. You love Mattingly. That's why a lot of Yankee fans, if they had one dying wish left, you wish that Don Mattingly would be able to be a part of a team, whether it be a coach or manager now or when he was a player, to be part of a team that won a World Series. You felt bad for Mattingly because his body gave out. Once he suffered that back injury, he was no longer the same player. But Mattingly at his finest, when he had that home run barrage, what he was defensively at first base, what he represented with the Yankees, how he enjoyed playing the game of baseball. I mean, there was nothing not to like about the way that Don Mattingly played the game. And everything that you talk about with Mattingly, you talk about Judge. Now Judge, you take up to another level. Because Judge not only hits for power, but he also has the high batting average as well. It's not like he's a guy that's hitting 50-plus home runs during the course of the regular season, and he's hitting 210 or 212 or 216. No, Aaron Judge is a guy that, has a tremendous amount of respect, can work a walk, has a high on-base percentage, can hit for a high average or extremely high average when you look at batting averages across Major League Baseball in today's day and age, and he also hits for power. With all that being said, though, the brilliance of Judge, the biggest key for the Yankees was the guy that was on the mound last night, and that is Gerrit Cole. Because if the Yankees are going to accomplish, as Jeter said this past weekend during Old Timers Day, even though they don't play a game, and he had the tremendous interviews with Girardi and Susan, as Jeter said and was talking to the media, every year, if you don't win a World Series, it was a failure. That was the mindset that he took as a player. Now, that mindset, as we've debated and talked about before, has changed within the Yankees. But if you are going to look at this team as it was put together for this year, that it was World Series or bust, with the uncertainty of Juan Soto as free agency gets going in Major League Baseball November the 2nd, mark the date on the calendar. If you look at it this year, the biggest key for the Yankees is not necessarily what Judge is going to be in October, although he's got to hit to take that next step in the pantheon of Yankee greats. It's not going to necessarily be Soto or who's hitting the leadoff. No, no. The biggest key is going to be Cole. Because come October, pitching still matters. Pitching still matters. And when you look at this Yankee starting rotation, and Brian Cashman at the MLB trade deadline, it was on around that time. Brian Cashman, with his actions, the Yankees had pinpointed the starting rotation as being an issue. That's why had conversations, almost finalized a deal with the Tigers for Darty, for Flaherty. Went out there, had conversations with the San Francisco Giants about Blake Snell. You know, almost dealt Nestor Cortez to the St. Louis Cardinals. He pinpointed starting rotation as being a kind of a breaking point for this team, something that was an area of need. Because Cole at that point in time, you know, had not, and outside of last night, you know, and he did have 7 strikeouts in 5 innings, did allow the 3 runs, 6 hits. By today's standard, you look at it as being probably a quality start from Gerrit Cole, just short of a quality start. But Cole had been a lot more dynamic his two or three previous starts before that. Gerrit Cole, come October, is going to be the biggest key because pitching in October matters. And when you look at the rest of this Yankees starting rotation, whether it be Rodon, who gets the ball later on tonight, whether it be Stroman, you know, the rehabbing Clark Schmidt, you know, Luis Gil, all these things that we have discussed. And I get Clay Holmes and the closer's role or the back end of the bullpen is a massive issue as well. But Cole, to me, is the biggest key. Bigger than anybody else. Because I don't care what Judge does. I don't care what Soto does. I don't care anything. You know, they will be limited to a certain extent by quality arms come October. They're not going to be able to beat up on some of the dregs of Major League Baseball. And we've seen it. And that's a fear with Yankee fans as well when you look at this lineup. Cole, by no stretch of the mat, is the biggest key. He's got to be dominant. He's got to lead this Yankee staff. He's going to be the guy that is going to, you know, you need to lean in on. That's going to give you not only a quality start, but a dominant start. Set the tone. And by all stretch of the imagination, listen, the Yankees want to win the American League East. It is remarkably easier with the way that Major League Baseball playoffs are set up now to set yourself up for success come October if you win the division. In all likelihood, it's going to come down to that series between the Yankees and the Orioles in September. I get it. But this is a division that you want to win. You want to win a World Series this year? We've talked about the brilliance of Soto. We've talked about the brilliance of Judge. We've talked about Soto and his impending free agency. We've talked about some of the managerial gaffes from Aaron Boone and the rationalization and the platitudes after the games. All of these things. Well, Cashman at the MLB trade deadline tried to add to this starting rotation because he knew it was a pressure point. Was not able to get the desired starter that he wanted. Puts more of an onus and pressure on Cole to be the guy the Yankees brought in when they signed him as a free agent from the Houston Astros, which is to be the finishing piece to a championship team. Now, that hasn't come to realization. But that's why this team, this year, this group was put together. Not about generating revenue. Not about having 43,000 plus at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Not about road attendance. Not selling the double deuce jerseys. Not doing all those things. Not celebrating the brilliance of Aaron Judge. Not having Old Timers Day. Not having everything that you enjoy about a Major League Baseball regular season. This team was put together to be dynamic and to be a championship team in October. And if they're going to be that, Cole, to me, if you're talking about priority and key, he's key number one.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, good beat coming out. 1123. Malicious with you on this Wednesday midday. 888-808-1019 is your number to call. Yankees kicking off the 11 o'clock hour. Floor is wide open. Manhattan we go. It's Jeff. It's the fan. What's going on, Jeff?
Hey, what's up, Moose? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Great, great, great. Listen, Moose, I'm a diehard Yankee fan, but man, unfortunately, until Boone stops playing LeMahieu, stops playing Trevino, we're screwed, man. We just are. And Cashman needs to call up the Dominguez like ASAP, man. He's killing it out in AAA. I mean, I don't know what they're waiting for.
Right, I understand, but where exactly is he going to play? Are you going to take Verdugo out of left field?
I mean, you know what you could do? I mean, you could platoon him against left-handers. You put Dominguez. Simple as that.
Yeah, I know Cashman came out and said there's no pathway right now for Jason Dominguez when he was asked about it about a week ago, I think it was, when Cashman was asked about it. And, you know, I think they were maybe an injury happened, maybe a case of Stanton going down would create a pathway to where then, you know, he could get ample playing time. I don't think they want to have Jason Dominguez, and not every player is going to respond well to where they're a part-time player either. So you got to read the individual too. So just saying, well, we're going to platoon him, and you know, well, not everybody's going to respond. You want to put your players in the best possible position to go out there and be successful as well. Listen, I think there are clearly, you know, issues when you look at this lineup. You like the fact that Gleyber has gotten hot a little bit. You know, Chisholm, you're going to deal with the inefficiencies of him learning the position at third base. You saw that last night on the tag, and you've seen that at third base at times as well. You know, the throw, I think he rushed last night because of who was running. But the tag at third, I mean, that's got to be one where, I mean, you get it. You get the tag down. You're not waiting for the guy to slide into you. And you saw that last night. But, yeah, I think Wells needs more playing time. You know, Trevino, to me, nice story a year ago. Issues with his arm, issues with controlling the running game. Wells, to me, should be the Yankees' number one catcher. I'm in agreement with you about LeMahieu. But if you are going to play him, there's certain spots where you can't have this inherent trust in LeMahieu anymore like you once did. That guy is gone. I mean, he's not. So there comes a point when you're down 4-2, one out, two men on base, and you're sending LeMahieu up when you've got three lefty bats on the bench, and you're going to look at the splits of Finnegan that's in the game for the Washington Nationals looking to close it out and save it. I get leaning into the analytics, but you also have to look at the player that's up at the plate as well and look at how inefficient LeMahieu has been as an offensive player this year.
Listen, the thing that scares me is our Achilles heel is hitting left-handed pitching. They want to beat us. All they got to do in the playoffs is just throw left-handed pitching, and we're done. We're dead.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jeff, I Yankees have been a little bit better on the road than they have been at home. I mean, there have been issues with this team. I don't know if it's necessarily just. And you saw it. You know, I get last night when you're going up against Patrick Corbin, you expected the Yankees to be successful, and they weren't. You know, they just weren't. They had opportunities. I mean, Judge coming up with the bases loaded, grounds into a double play, hits the ball hard, but hits it right at the shortstop and ends up being a double play and ends up being a rally killer. Now you're going to kill Aaron Judge? You're obviously not. I mean, because Judge has been downright brilliant this year. He's been historically great. So, you know, that's going to happen at times. But it's just a game. What you don't like last night when looking at that game is some of the decision-making by the manager end of the game and the sloppiness by the Yankees, which has become a thing now all of a sudden in the game. You know, throwing the ball all over the place. Inability to get a tag down at third base. Trevino thrown down to second and nobody covering. The miscommunication you saw there. Like, those are the things where that at this stage of the year, we're sitting here, it's what, August the 28th? Like, that is stuff that needs to be cleaned up. Alex in Brooklyn's up next in the family. What's going on, Alex?
Hey, Moose, how are you?
I'm doing well, Alex. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch a little bit about the Giants' offensive line. And listen, the Giants haven't had a sustainable offensive line since the days of Eli. We know whatever we have in Daniel Jones, which we don't know 1,000% yet what we do, what we don't have, being that he was injured. Well, we need to see what he has. We need a sustainable offensive line. Where do you see the offensive line at this point? Because obviously, last year, even 2 years ago when Daniel Jones had his good season, that was in the contract, the offensive line was not great. to me, to see the best in Daniel Jones, to see the best in this team, we need to see a good offensive line. Where do you see the Giants' offensive line right now?
Yeah, when healthy, Thomas is a stud at left tackle. I like Runyon coming over. They beat out the Jets from the Green Bay Packers. I'm not telling you that he's an all-time great guard, but I think he's a massive improvement. Schmitz, I think, is, you know, a good young center that I don't think is, you know, I saw somebody tweet out yesterday that Schmitz is a bust, and I saw Art Stapleton respond to it. I mean, that is out of line. That's not true. I think you found the answer at the center position with John Michael Schmitz. I think with the signing of Luminor, I think the offensive, I think bringing in a new offensive line coach from the Raiders was a massive upgrade. I think the offensive line is going to be improved this year from the group that took the field last year. Now, they've got to stay healthy. The issue with the Giants last year was lack of talent amongst the starters along the offensive line, lack of quality depth, and then the injuries that hit the team. Now, I can't predict injuries, right? So do the Giants need their two tackles to stay healthy this year? Yeah, they do. Is that imperative? Could it be disastrous if Andrew Thomas goes down? No doubt about it, 100%. But there's not one team in the National Football League that can lose a franchise left tackle as the Giants have, and then you're going to be able to replace that player without batting an eyelid. That's not happening. Thomas is getting paid what he's getting paid because he's a ridiculous talent at his position and got rewarded for that, right? So he's one of the best left tackles in the entire National Football League. I think the line's going to be improved. I think that's what you learned from the Giants offseason with Hard Knocks is that when I grew up watching the Giants, it was about what? Protecting the quarterback, getting after theirs. I'm not telling you this is an all-time great offensive line, but we've been talking about the Giant offensive line for way too long since they won the Super Bowl in 2011. It's been 13 years, right? It was toward the tail end of Reese. It was during the Gettleman era. Now it's during Joe Shane. So every general manager has told you that their number one priority is fixing the offensive line. I'm not telling you that this is going to be one of the best in the NFL. If they stay healthy, they'll be markedly better than the one that took the field last year.
Yeah, I completely agree. Also, the responsibilities of the offensive line have to pick up a little, only because not only are they now protecting the pass rush, but now they don't have as much as of a dynamic running back as Saquon left the team. They're going to have to create a running game also, which Brian Daboll has shown that the running game is really what sustained the Giants through that season 2 years ago. So they have more responsibility now, so we're hoping to see an improvement. Just one more question real quick. Do you think Daniel Jones, where do you see the ceiling for Daniel Jones? Let's say he has a good offensive line and his receivers are good receivers, they got good weapons. Where do you see the ceiling for Daniel Jones this season and the season to come?
Yeah, I mean, Alex, it's a really good question. I've been more positive pro Daniel Jones than most. And I get you can lean negative when you look at DJ as a quarterback. I think he provides you enough examples where you look at Daniel Jones and you say, I don't necessarily believe. Pocket presence, game has not slowed down. You look at him statistically, he's not dominant, all of those things. What's the ceiling to Jones? If we're looking at statistically speaking, say if you're looking at touchdown passes, I would expect with the receiving core that they have, with Neighbors, Slayton, Wandell Robinson, and Jalin Hyatt, I would think he's going to be in the mid-20s in touchdown passes. Now, the question to me with Jones is not only health, how good he can be, protecting the quarterback, protecting the ball, not turning the football over, is how can he play the position? Stylistically, how can Daniel Jones play the position? Now, you go back 2 years ago when the Giants went to the playoffs, beat Minnesota. Jones was the best player on the field that day when they beat the Minnesota Vikings. Now you might say, well, I didn't really think the Vikings were that good that year. They're the cardiac kids. They won a ton of games by 7 points or less. Never really a believer in Kirk Cousins in a big-time game. Okay, all of those things. But you can't take away from the fact that Daniel Jones was the best player on the field that day, regardless of position. He was. Now, what does that do for me now? What stylistically, what is Jones going to be? Because what made Daniel Jones so good that day was his ability to not only throw it, but his ability to run it. Now, Jones is coming off a torn ACL that he suffered in the Raider game last year out in Vegas. He's now had two neck injuries. Can I run Daniel Jones and have design quarterback runs? He's never going to be Lamar Jackson. He's never going to be Michael Vick. But there's an asset to him as a non-pocket passing quarterback, pure pocket passing quarterback, that the Giants and Daboll as a play caller now, taking over that role, wants to take advantage of. Where the defense, you have to respect the idea that Daniel Jones can break the pocket and be able to run it. How often can I run it? Can his body hold up stylistically to him being able to use all of his physical assets at the quarterback position? Like, that's a million-dollar question. Because if I take that out of his game, then I think the effectiveness of Daniel Jones takes a hit. But aggression's the word. I mean, if you were out a day or 10 days or all throughout the course of training camp, I think the idea of this Giant offense is they're going to want to try and push the ball deep. They're going to take their shots. They're going to use their speed. They're going to use their playmakers. That means the offensive line up front has to hold up and they have to protect. And we'll see if they can. Let's head out to Floral Park. It's Ken. It's the fan. What's going on, Ken?
Hey, Moose. Great show as usual. You're a must listen. You're just a must listen all the time.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it, man.
Sure. I had a point on Chisholm, but before I get to that, I don't know if you heard Boone's post-game last night. I didn't hear if you mentioned that. The reason he said he was asked about the thing with LeMahieu, and he said he doesn't like where Finnegan is tough on lefties, but I much would have rather seen Cabrera up there.
Yes.
In that spot.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I mean, Ken, I referenced it. Yeah, no, I saw it. I get it. The problem is, I mean, the guys that had hits on him in the were lefties.
It's insane.
Like, you listen to it and you're just like, you know.
Brutal.
I'd rather him go like, listen, I went with my, you know, and he has the stats to back it up, to have a righty. You look at Finnegan's splits, he's tougher against lefties than he is righties on the season.
Yeah.
All that is true. So he leans in on the analytics. I'd rather, though, but not every instance is one and the same.
No.
Like, you have to also look at LeMahieu, the player, and where he is as a hitter now. Now, I mentioned it, right? He's hitting .250 in the month of August. Much better than the .170 he hit the previous month and the .167 he hit the month before that. Like, LeMahieu, but he is no longer that caliber of hitter where you should have this inherent trust in LeMahieu if you're the Yankee manager. That trust is, amazingly enough, still there.
No, it's unbelievable. Anyway, with Chisholm, you know, I was not a big fan of him coming to the team. Now, he's definitely had moments, no question about it. I didn't love his plate discipline. I've seen him with the Marlins before. But this idea of an experiment at third base, I think, could come back to bite them. If he doesn't clean up, he's had like four errors in the last game. If you can't, you can't do a trial and error of somebody who's never played the position late in the season and hope that that's going to clean itself up in October. I think that could be a big, that could bite. That's like when they played Glaber at shortstop instead of second. It's like, what are you doing with you know, an experiment like that? You got to get somebody who really knows how to play third base.
I get it. But I do think there's a little bit of difference. I don't think Glaber could physically play the position. Like, I think Jazz Chisholm can. I think you're just dealing with the warts of him learning a new position on the fly on the major league level. Yeah. So, like, I think it finally became abundantly clear that I don't care what Glaber did in the minor leagues, he's not a major league shortstop. Like, the Yankees were the last person, the last entity to actually realize that. I think that's different with Chisholm. But where else do you go?
No, that's
like, here's the issue. Well, like, where else
Cabrera.
Do you go? You're not going to move.
Cabrera.
Well, you're not going to. You can't. Well, where are you playing Chisholm then? If you have a.
I understand. Yeah, I got it.
Like, where else are you going to go? Glaber, he's there for his offense. You're going to put him in the most comfortable spot. He already said he doesn't want to play third base, and I don't blame him. He's looking to get paid after this season as well.
Yeah.
And he had an organization that force-fed him shortstop, right? So I'll defend him there. And his greatest asset is his offense. It's not like he's never going to be Roberto Alomar at second base. It's not going to be like he's going to be this defensive whiz. So Glaber's offense is going to be the biggest key. I want to make sure that he's comfortable, because we do know this. If he's not comfortable defensively, it's going to affect his offense. So that's why you have Chisholm. Now, if LeMahieu was the DJ LeMahieu from the first 2 years, then we're having a different conversation. We're not.
Yeah.
He isn't.
Yeah.
And you have no other options right now at first base. There's not that trust in Ben Rice. Rizzo's on the mend. He's down in Somerset hitting home runs as he did last night. That's great to see. Maybe Rizzo rejoins this team, and then you have your answer at first base. But right now, Chisholm, that's the only spot he can play.
I definitely get that point, and you're right. I'm just afraid it's gonna bite him in the rear end in the playoffs. That's what I'm concerned about. But anyway,
I don't listen. When you come off a game as sloppy as the Yankees looked last night, you could look at the defense. That's not the concern number one for me, though. Like, I don't know if I'm going to look at it where, because I could always, late in games, if I'm nursing a lead and hand it off to my bullpen, and I have, like, say, a 5-2 lead, take Chisholm out of the game and put in a guy like Cabrera at third base because I have a lot more confidence in him at third base in that situation to prevent the big-time error. Now, early in the game, can't do it. I'm leaning in on the athleticism, the offensive prowess at times, what Chisholm provides to my lineup. I'm leaning in on that. But I can make some adjustments late in games if I'm trying to hold on to a lead in a big-time playoff game.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
11:46, Mark Melusis with you on this Wednesday midday. Peter outside. We got you for the next 2-plus hours, right up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Paul in beautiful Buffalo, New York, is up next on The Fan. What's going on, Paul?
Moose, how are you? It's been a while since I've got the pleasure to talk to you, and it's great to hear you in the midday.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Appreciate it, bud.
Moose, your Yankee points always hit, and you hit it right on with Gerrit Cole. And I've said this to you before a while ago. The definition of an ace is 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs or less. And I believe Cole will do that in the playoffs because I think, wisely, the Yankees hold him back in regular season games. You very rarely see him go past 6 innings during the regular season now, and that's fine. You know, the Yankees are going to be in the playoffs, and I think they're going to win the division. And Cole needs to go 7-plus in every game he starts in the playoffs. My question for this Yankee playoff run is, has Nestor Cortez in the last month of baseball proven himself to be a lock to be in the playoff rotation?
My answer would be, what is your rotation right now as presently constituted? Cole is your number one.
Cole, and then I got to say Heel, unless the Yankees feel his arm is tired. And I number three, if Rodon shows me something the last month of the season, I certainly want Rodon there. But right now, I have more faith in Nestor than Rodon. And that might sound crazy to people. Stroman, I think I know what I would get. If the team scored 4 runs, I believe Marcus Stroman would give them a chance to win into the 6th inning. It's a good rotation. It's not like they're bad, but it's nothing like the security we had with the 90s team.
Oh, no. I mean, well, yeah, it's a far cry. I mean, there's nobody. I mean, let's be honest, Paul. There's nobody on this team in terms of a pressurized pitcher that would trust Orlando Hernandez.
No, that's correct.
El Duque would take the summer off, would come back in October, and he'd pitch, you know, dominant innings in the playoffs. I mean, so, like, nobody's to that level. I mean, Cortez has been good the last 3 starts. I mean, he has. Got lit up by the Angels, very good against Chicago, the White Sox, very good against Cleveland, you know, and very good against Washington. I'm not going to discount any of that. Could he find himself in that starting rotation in October? You know, he could. We're a ways off. I think it's very fluid in behind Gerrit Cole. I don't think there's any doubt about it in terms of how it stacks up. It'd be difficult if Rodon pitches well to think that he's not going to be part of it. They invested $162 million into him. Obviously, you invest that kind of money into a starter. Unless he is non-competitive, I would believe Rodon is going to be one of those guys. I think Stroman, it's based on the opponent. He pitches to contact. Obviously, he's not a pure Yankee Stadium pitcher because of the short porch out in right field and because he had the penchant to giving up fly balls. You mentioned about Heel. Heel's a massive, you know, quandary when you look at it. Superseding innings that he's never thrown, as a professional starter, regardless of level, has had armor injuries in the past. He's an asset that you want to clearly protect, but you want to keep your eye on the prize this year of trying to win a World Series. So, and then you throw Clark Schmidt into the mix. So I think it's very fluid behind Gerrit Cole. To answer you, could Cortez find him? To answer your question, long story long, could Cortez find himself in it? Yes, if he continues to pitch like he did his last three starts, because he was, regardless of opponent, Washington and Chicago, the White Sox are one of the, you know, are just a dreadful baseball team. But he has pitched deep into games. You know, he's thrown, you know, 104 pitches plus in two of those three starts. Cortez has kind of rounded into form here. So could he, based on performance, find himself being a part of it? Yeah, he could.
Absolutely. I hope so, because I think all of us Yankee fans, we love Nestor Cortez because he is the everyman. He looks like one of us. He's got a little wiggle to him out there. He's got personality. He's our Bartolo Colon, if you will. So I'm rooting for Nestor to be in the rotation, and I hope he keeps up his savvy pitching.
Yeah, listen, I had an issue with what he had to, you know, tweet out at the All-Star break, but I get it. I mean, as you know, he's a guy that, you know, was not predicted to be where he is. Has taken advantage of the opportunity. Has taken a long road to being a major league starter. Has earned his opportunity here in New York with the Yankees. So I get why he's an easy guy to root for. You love the story. Ray in Brooklyn's up next to the fan. What's going on, Ray?
Who's good afternoon. It's nice to talk to you again. And by the way, you are a legend, and no need to be modest, sir, because it is the absolute truth.
Oh, thank you, Ray. Appreciate it, bud. What's on your mind, man?
Of course, man. Definitely. So, you know, I called about the Giants. But let me say this about the Yankees and Nestor Cortez real quick. I do kind of agree with the gentleman that just called. I mean, Nestor Cortez in his first 19 starts, which is not a small sample size, that's basically two-thirds of the season, had a 3.51 ERA, and it became inflated with his next, like, four or five starts, and everybody forgot about the previous 19. He's currently a top 20, I think he's 21st in the league in WHIP. I think he's been, so much is overstated about Clay Holmes pitching to bad luck. I think Nestor Cortez has pitched to bad luck, but now, like you said, he's rounding into shape, and I do trust him a lot more than I trust Rodon, especially at home. So I'm not sure, you know, if you agree with that or not, but I will move on to my guy.
Yeah, I mean, Ray, I don't, you know, trust factor with the Yankees, even with Gerrit Cole, is not all that high when you look at the starters. I don't trust Rodon. I don't trust Cortez on the road. Trust him more at home. His splits would back that up as well. I don't have trust in Marcus Stroman in a big-time spot pitching a contact. Luis Gil, when he was great, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a Yankee fan in the tri-state area that didn't trust Luis Gil. But we've seen the up-and-down nature of a guy working through some things as well, and he's thrown a lot this year. I get where your confidence comes with Nestor Cortez. And I think, like I mentioned before, I think it's very fluid behind Gerrit Cole. So Cortez has had a pretty good year, really good year when you look at it statistically at times, and he's been really good his last three starts.
Absolutely. And I wholeheartedly concur with you on the fact that it's fluid, because everybody's basically pitching on the same level. So as far as the Giants are concerned, I am, you know, I may be in the minority, but I'm a little bit optimistic. I think this team can win anywhere between 8 and 11 games. I think that if a relative stiff like Pat Shermer can get almost 30 touchdowns out of Daniel Jones in 12 starts, that, you know, the genius, and put air quotes on that, that is Ryan Dable, better, at least minimally, get, you know, 30 touchdowns out of him in 5 more starts in 17 games, and with a better offensive line and better weapons, I don't think that that's far-fetched. And as far as the running game moves, I have more confidence in the running game now than I have with Barkley the last couple of years. Certainly Barkley in his first 2 years was amazing. But the last couple of years, my eyes tell me that he constantly put us behind the chains. And this team and his offense is obviously not built to come back from, for you know, second and 14 when he's running backwards to trying to hit a home run rather than being consistent and moving forward all the time and getting you 3 yards. I'd rather have consistency in the running game than, you know, have a home run hit once every other day by Barkley, because now at least you're on schedule. You give the offense a chance. Instead of second and 13, second and 14, you know, now you're, you know, second and 7, second and 6, and everything is manageable and doable. And, you know, like, the only thing that I see that's a huge negative is obviously, like, the corners. But I think every other part of the team is solid. I think we can pull out some close games like we did a few years ago and win anywhere between 8 and 11 games and maybe sneak into the playoffs. And I it, Moose. You truly are a legend.
I appreciate that, Ray. I mean, it's a really positive and optimistic view when you're looking at the Giants. I think the line will get better. I think it's hard to judge Barkley based on the lines that he was running up against. I agree with you. Finishing off runs at times. We talked about him running out of bounds. The physical nature to his running style. But you can't compare Barkley and Singletary in terms of being home run hitters. Guys that can change the course in the context of a game with one touch, one carry, one catch coming out of the backfield. I mean, Saquon's just a more physically gifted individual as compared to Devin Singletary. But I mean, the Giants have moved on. Saquon's moved on. He put himself in a really good winning position down in Philadelphia with the Eagles. Yeah, I think the Giants want to try and have more, obviously, early down success running the football. It's going to help out their passing game. If Jones stays healthy, I was talking to Dove before the show started today, and Dove asked me the question, how many games do you think Daniel Jones is going to play? I'm like, I think he's going to play double digits. I mean, I do. I mean, I don't think he's getting benched unless he's just non-competitive. Like, I don't think that's happening. I mean, the Giants tried to make their play for their quarterback of the future and go up and move up into the draft to get, you know, whether it be Jaden Daniels, whether it be Drake May. They couldn't get their guy. So they sat there at six and drafted a ultra-talented playmaking wide receiver in Malik Nabers. They addressed the offensive line in free agency. They addressed the defense in a big-time trade with Brian Burns. And they're expecting Burns, Thibodeau, Okereke, and obviously the stud that Dexter Lawrence is up front to create a little bit of pressure or a lot of pressure to limit the impact of the inexperience they have on the back end of that secondary. 1156, Malus is with you. 888-888-808-1019. That's 888-808-1019. It's a Wednesday midday right here, the Fan in New York.